Mesdames, Messieurs.
Ladies and gentlemen, dear shareholders, good afternoon. I'm very happy to welcome you to this combined general meeting of your company, which this year again is being held in very particular circumstances. The fact is that in the context of the COVID-19 epidemic and in order to preserve the health and safety of everybody, we've chosen to hold this annual meeting that we attach a lot of importance to, once again in a way that is adapted and adjusted to the current health restrictions. So our general meeting will be held behind closed doors and is being, of course, broadcast live on our website. We've implemented all of the necessary means so that this meeting can remain a special moment to provide you with information and have debates with yourselves in spite of the particular circumstances we're living in. So, for example, in order to dialogue with as many of you as possible during the meeting, there's a dedicated platform for the shareholders that's been opened and enables you, as of now and throughout our session, to ask questions and receive answers that will be given at the end of the session, of course. Ask questions in writing by audio or video. You can access this platform via our website. I'd like to, before setting up the committee of this meeting, spend a moment to express my sympathy and my support to people who have been affected or are still being affected by this crisis in any way. I would like also to thank all of our people who, for many months, have proven their agility and their full commitment to helping us to provide continued services. So it's just a small group of people that's with me here today. We have, of course, Thomas Buberl, our CEO, Jean-Pierre Clamadieu, who is Senior Independent Director and is the Chairman of the Compensation and Governance Committee, and Etienne Bouas-Laurent, the CFO of the group. The board members of your company who are usually in attendance physically are attending the meeting remotely, like yourselves. I'd like to thank them on this occasion for their commitment and their active contribution to the proceedings of the board. I'm also happy to salute Mr. Guillaume Faury and Mr. Raymond Fernandez, who have been offered as candidates to sit on the board if you pass the resolution accordingly this afternoon. We will now conduct the prior formalities before we open the session. We've set up the committee of the meeting. We've convened the meeting, of course, in line with the legal provisions. There was an invitation to the meeting published on the 1st of March in 2021 in the French Legal Gazette, the BALO, and also a notice of meeting that featured in the same gazette on the 24th of March 2021 and in the Les Affiches Parisiennes official announcements journal on the 24th of March 2021. I would now like to set up the committee of the meeting. As chairman of the board of directors, I myself shall chair this meeting. We shall appoint as scrutineers the company that's AXA Assurance IRD Mutuelle, represented by Mr. Nicolas Magnier, present with us, and the company that's AXA Assurance Vie Mutuelle, represented by Mr. Olivier Richer, present with us too. So thank you for giving your agreement to do that, and I suggest that as secretary of the meeting, we should appoint Mr. Etienne Bouas-Laurent. So we now have set up the committee of the meeting. We have our statutory auditors with us, Price WaterhouseCoopers Audit, represented by Ms. Bénédicte Vignon, and Mr. Maxime Simouen from Mazars office. They've been convened in line with the legal requirements by registered letter. Finally, I'm making available, of course, to all of the participants at the meeting, all of the legal documents required by the current regulations. I would add that shareholders who've requested these documents have received them and have received all of the information provided for by law. And I'd like to say that as the meeting is being held behind closed doors, all of the voting process for the resolutions, the polls, have taken place by correspondence. So we have taken in the votes until 3 p.m. yesterday. So 16,678 shareholders have voted by correspondence or sent a proxy to the chairman, representing 1,522,469,174 shares, and representing, therefore, 63.96% of the total shares with voting rights and 65% of existing voting rights. So we now have a quorum for this meeting, and we are therefore duly convened as an ordinary AGM and an extraordinary general meeting. And at the end of this session, the outcome of the polls will be presented by Mr. Etienne Bouas-Laurent. We have continued here today as a combined general meeting so that you can vote upon 15 resolutions that are part of the ordinary session and 13 resolutions that are part of the extraordinary session. As every year, I would suggest that you would authorize me to not read out in full the agenda of the current meeting and just take cognizance of the simplified agenda that you have on the screen before you. I would also like you to authorize me to not read out in full the report of the Board of Directors included in the URD of AXA. This report was made available to you at the head office of the company or was sent to you upon your request. I'd now like to give the floor to Thomas Buberl, who will present an update on 2020, the full year of 2020, and the strategic outlook of the group.
Bonjour.
Good afternoon, everybody, dear shareholders. I'm very happy to be with you today for this shareholders' meeting. I would, of course, have preferred to be with you physically at an in-person session, but the crisis we're going through requires us to exceptionally organize this shareholders' meeting, this time remotely. We've been going through an unforeseen crisis, something we never saw before, and AXA has, I think, demonstrated its great soundness. The revenues of the group stand at €97 billion in 2020, more or less flat. This is the fruit of the strong performance of our priority lines of business, but it's also the result of our investments in digital. These enabled us to pursue our activities in spite of the lockdowns. Thanks to all of this, we've managed to generate a high level of underlying earnings at €4.3 billion. This result is, of course, down a bit because the crisis cost us €1.5 billion worth of compensation and solidarity measures, but it's our job to be by our customers' side in difficult times whilst remaining financially sound as a company. There is one indicator that shows this perfectly well. That is our Solvency II ratio. It stands at 200% at the 31st of December 2020, up by 2 points compared with December 2019. It is, in fact, a figure that overshoots our objective. It's because we've been able to maintain our commercial performance and our financial soundness whilst protecting our clients that we are now capable today of paying out a dividend to our shareholders. This proves the soundness, the robustness of our group, and also our confidence in our outlook going forward. As you can see, our geographies and high potential businesses have fully contributed to our resilience. France and Europe have demonstrated their great robustness during the course of this difficult year we've gone through, with underlying earnings that are flat at €4.3 billion. This illustrates the relevance of our business mix and also of our strategy and indeed as well of our correct positioning on these European markets. In Asia and international markets, the great growth of our health business demonstrates the high potential of this business and the dynamism of its geographies. The crisis confirms the fact that health is, of course, a major challenge always. And finally, we're continuing our development in alternatives with a growth of 14% of these assets, standing at €159 billion. AXA Investment Managers is a European leader in alternative management, asset management. This is a real asset for us in order to generate financial performance in a context where the interest rates are low. This illustrates the relevance of our business mix in our group and our group's ability to focus on geographies and segments that have high potential in order to generate growth. As I've just said, our revenue figure was more or less flat last year. This is the fruit of the good business dynamics of our strategic business lines, that is health, commercial, P&C, and protection. In spite of this crisis of a sort we've never seen before, these segments have pursued their growth, which even fast-tracked in the third and then in the fourth quarter of 2020. These are businesses of the future that meet essential needs for our clients. That holds true as we speak today, but it will be even more true in the future. In 2020, we also pursued our work on profitability in property casualty. If we set aside the exceptional effects of the crisis, the COVID crisis, and the natural catastrophes, our combined ratio has continued to improve. Our strategic plan provides for an objective of a combined ratio of 93%. We are therefore on track. Finally, we continued with our strategy to transform the business mix we have in life and savings. We're really focused on the products that are the most worthwhile and interesting for our clients and the less capital burners for AXA. Last year, we sped up the transformation of our subsidiary AXA XL. Firstly, a new team came in under the aegis of Scott Gunter. He immediately set up a new organization that is simpler, more streamlined, and that's already up and running. Secondly, AXA XL bolstered its discipline in terms of underwriting. It focused on profitability and high potential products. I'm thinking in particular of insurance lines for businesses in the US, where AXA XL has a fine market share. Finally, we pursued a lot of important action in order to continue to reduce volatility. We set up a budget for NatCats that's more prudent, and we have also taken out additional protection for some long lines. These transformation operations were conducted in a very positive, an extremely positive pricing environment. This momentum continued also in the third and then in the fourth quarter of 2020. For all of these reasons, we confirm our result, our objective, for the underlying earnings of AXA XL, which stands at €1.2 billion for 2021. We've got to be underpinned by our fundamentals. It's only by doing that that AXA can remain present for all of its stakeholders. And this is what it's been like in 2022, underpinned by our fundamentals. Firstly, we were at the side of our 100 million clients. I'd like to recall that the impact of the claims and the solidarity measures connected with the pandemic stood at €1.5 billion worth of our earnings. That's the strength of AXA, to fully play our role as an insurer whilst being highly resilient at the same time. This soundness also enabled us to be closer to our people, the people working in the organisation. We guaranteed that people could stay in their jobs and continue to do their jobs during lockdown without using state aid. Where some companies might have pruned down their projects, we, on the contrary, fast-tracked our policy vis-à-vis our people. We widened our strategy on home working, and we also deployed a global program for the health of our staff, especially mental health of the people working in the organization. In a few minutes, our Human Resources Director at group level, Karima Silvent, will make a presentation. She will show you how we're speeding up the transformation of the AXA corporate culture. We also fully played our role in the stabilization and the stimulus to be given to our economy. When everything else stopped, we supported business activity. In France, for example, we devoted €700 million to bolster the equity base of SMEs. We're also going to mobilize €2 billion for the Prêt Participatif Relance scheme, stimulus participatory loans. Finally, we supported jobs by announcing 5,000 recruitments in France, including 30% of young people. And as you know very well, these are among the people most impacted by this crisis. I'd also like to focus for a minute on our clients as well. We've been modernizing our distribution network, and that's progressed very well between 2019 and 2020. This enabled us, gave us a springboard, I would say, to be always present so as to meet their expectations. I would also like to thank our thousands of frontline people for their unbelievable commitment at the service of our clients during this serious crisis. Also, thanks to our digital investments in remote working, almost €1 billion worth in 4 years. Thanks to all of this, our staff were able to work remotely at the service of our clients. I'd like to also sincerely thank them for this unbelievable result that they've achieved during this very particular crisis. Thanks to all of that, customer satisfaction has gone up. It went up by 19 points last year. Of course, not everything was perfect. I'm thinking of some of our clients who encountered major difficulties, such as restaurant owners or cultural institutions. But AXA is more than 100 million retail clients and commercial clients that were able to rely on our help and support during this very serious crisis. I'd also like to say a few words on our commitment in the fight to abate the effects of climate change. In spite of the crisis, we continued to take active part in this combat against climate change as investors. We launched a second transition bond, which is an innovative financial tool so as to finance the ecological transition of companies. We also increased our green investments by more than €4 billion in 2020. They stand at €16 billion. Our objective is to achieve €25 billion between now and 2023. Also, we extended our commitments as an insurance company by rolling out the Net Zero Insurance Alliance. This is a very important thinking process that can transform the way in which we select risks. Finally, and this is the first off, the fight against climate change is now one of the priorities of our new strategic plan, just like our financial objectives. In a few minutes, we will see here on the set Céline Soubran, who is our director in charge of sustainable development, and Pascal Cristori, who is in charge of investments, their chief investment officer. They will both present to you the way in which our group has been committing in favour of the climate. I'd like to now give you a few insights into what the future holds in store. We're quite confident for 2021. We think that our companies will succeed in moving on from this crisis and that AXA will be able to perform in the post-COVID period by being underpinned by its major strengths, that is the turnaround of AXA XL, the performance of our business activities in Europe and in France, the growth potential that we see in Asia and international markets, and also within AXA Investment Managers. That's our, of course, asset management business. Our new strategic plan that's driving Progress 2023, that's the name of it, I'll come back to it in a minute. This plan has set down an objective for growth in the underlying earnings per share between 3%-7% on average between 2020 and 2023. The baseline, the departure point for this objective is a result of 6.3 billion euro. This amount for 2020 offsets the exceptional impact of COVID-19 and of the natural disasters beyond the normalized levels. This level is in line with the 2019 underlying earnings. It testifies to our confidence in the implementation of our new strategic plan. This new plan, in fact, revolves around five priority actions for which we set ourselves precise, very precise objectives. We want to develop in the segments of health and protection. For a start, the crisis has shown to what extent these challenges are fundamental. We want to grow our revenues in health and in protection by more than 5% per annum on average. Second priority, to simplify, streamline the customer experience, and speed up our productivity efforts. The simpler a company is, the more agile it is, the better it will be positioned so as to meet the needs of its clients. If we reduce the useless stages, useless for our clients, I mean, by simplifying our organization, we will also be able to make fine savings, 500 million euro worth, between 2019 and 2023. Third priority is to bolster our underwriting performance. We're aiming, as I said earlier, aiming at a combined ratio of 93% in property casualty between now and 2023. Fourthly, we're going to further bolster our climate leadership. We added to our commitments for the long term an intermediate step. That is the reduction by 20% of the carbon footprint of the assets in our general fund by 2025. Lastly, we've a fifth priority, which is to grow the cash flows in all of the group by upstreaming 5 billion-6 billion euro of cash to the holding company. This is a key challenge. None of what AXA did during the crisis would have been possible without exemplary robustness. In addition to the objectives set for each of these five priority actions we've just been looking at, our plan that's driving Progress 2023 also includes four cross-cutting objectives: to grow our underlying earnings per share by 3% to 5% per annum on average, generate more than 14 billion euro worth of upstreamed aggregate cash between 2021 and 2023, deliver operational profitability of our equity between 13%-15%, and maintain our Solvency II ratio close to 190%. With the rollout of this plan that's driving Progress 2023, this is a new strategic phase that is starting now for AXA. To support me in this new stage, I will be helped by a renewed management team. It will enable us to promote internal talents, especially in the financial department and in AXA France. It will provide us with more diversity among the top management echelons. The organization will finally be simpler and revolve around deputy CEOs who will have a wealth of experience. AXA is now a group that's simpler, more streamlined, sounder, and focused on its strengths. AXA is a leader on the European markets, more often than not, among the top three of the insurance companies present locally. AXA is also the global leader in commercial property casualty. We are present everywhere in the world, especially thanks to our subsidiary AXA XL, which constitutes a unique platform for our clients. AXA has growth potential in markets and business lines that are promising. I'm thinking in particular of Asia, where we generate more than 2 billion euro of revenues in health, or AXA Investment Managers, whose expertise in alternative asset management guarantees high growth potential. As you can see, AXA is transformed, simpler, and focused on the markets and segments of the future. Especially, this is a fundamental point for us, the group is very well positioned so as to generate value in the long term. Before I conclude, I'd like to tell you how far we've got in implementing our purpose, acting for human progress and at the same time protecting what matters. We presented this last year. To make it concrete and operational for all of our teams, we are today rolling out the AXA Index for Progress. It aims at measuring and widening the impact of the purpose of AXA in our business lines via very precise objectives. Firstly, regarding our investments, to start off with the reduction of the carbon footprint of the assets in the general account by 20% between now and 2025, and the development of the green investment portfolio so as to reach a level of 25 billion euro between now and 2023. Then, in our insurance businesses, bolstering the share of insurance products that have a positive impact on the environment, and by the promotion of inclusive insurance with vulnerable populations. Finally, in our operations, as a responsible company, we are going to train all of the employees of AXA into an understanding of the climate-related challenges thanks to our climate school. We also have an objective of carbon neutrality for our businesses between now and 2025. The AXA for Progress Index incorporates also the position of AXA in the S&P Global Corporate Sustainability Assessment, which distinguishes companies that are the most responsible in the financial industry. In order to speed up the deployment of our purpose, we're also going to integrate the objectives of this index in the criteria for the compensation of the senior managers of the group. This initiative bolsters our process aiming at making AXA into a very responsible company vis-à-vis all of its stakeholders. To conclude, I would like to say that during this year, AXA has put in a particular effort in terms of solidarity, a non-rivaled effort that's shown its great robustness. We owe this to the teams of AXA and to our people who were extremely committed out there. I'd like to once again thank you all. We also owe this to the relevance of our strategy and of our vision. For these reasons, we are confident in our prospects going forward. Dear shareholders, thank you indeed for your attention.
I thank you, Thank you, Thomas Gould, for your presentation, and I'll turn it over to Karine Sylvent, who's in charge of human resources. She will speak about the acceleration of the cultural policy at AXA. Let's view a film that gives the floor to an AXA individual shareholders about how she looks at shareholding. I'm Isabelle Soiseau. I'm 54, married, two children, and I'm an executive in the metal, in the packing business. For the past 35 years, I became a shareholder for the first time in my life, between 20 and 25 years ago. And at the time, we went into the Lyon stock market with our company, and we were asked to buy some shares to support its growth. I liked it very much. Then I was tempted by other companies, two types of companies, I would say, more generally speaking, large CAC 40 corporations, but also more middle-sized ones in Dijon, Burgundy, which were developing regionally a local entrepreneurship around Dijon. To me, being a shareholder represents the fact of being involved in an adventure, support a company in its growth or in the adventure it's undertaking. It's also making sure that they can hear my voice in order to modestly participate in the decisions of the company and express what I want for the future of that company. AXA is a recent adventure for me. I started less than 2 years ago as a shareholder. The first criterion is about trust. That is, you trust your money to someone who you can trust, whether it's AXA or a multinational group or a very small Dijonais-based startup. I give this money trusting that you will be well managed. I just want to contribute what I've given, that trust. We look. Trust doesn't exclude controlling, monitoring. So I give, and I remain trustful. The fact of investing in a company gets us closer to the company, and at the same time, if a company were not fully aligned with my values, we'd have a hard time investing in it. It's a question that we ask ourselves as a shareholder. Am I going to invest here? Am I aligned or not with the company? And sometimes you may want to leave a company when you feel, look, we are not aligned with the values. I mean, aligned with AXA's value in the support to people. This is something that is dear to me that we all experienced during the health crisis, and AXA is present as an insurer. It's important to support people when they have hardships. I invest. To me, this is money which I may not need, but it's an investment over the long term up until my retirement, and why not transmit it to my children? Ladies and gentlemen, dear shareholders, I'm very pleased to present today the guidelines of our HR policy of our strategic plan. The development of responsibility and inclusion are at the center of our project for the next few years. Let me start by thanking our staff members who showed an exceptional commitment ever since the crisis started, and I know that many of them are looking at us today. Our purpose, acting for human progress by protecting what matters, has guided our actions with a steady concern, which is protecting our employees. We put in place remote work on a full-time basis whenever necessary. In practice, it meant that it was the case for most of 2020 for all our employees around the globe. Our staff members were equipped with IT means and conference videos and were trained to work from a distance. All these efforts allowed to preserve and increase the quality of service with our policy holders, as you were able to see a few minutes ago. I'm underlining the fact that we also made the choice to preserve and protect the wages for all our employees, and we have never resorted to part-time unemployment or whatever was equivalent to this in the various states where we operate. Thirdly, our employees massively participated in solidarity actions that we put in place. For example, in France, nearly 1,400 colleagues were involved in so-called solidarity actions organized by our association AXA à tout cœur, and we are celebrating its 30 years of existence this year, and which has been working since it was created by Claude Bébriand in favor of social, societal, and solidarity engagement. I'm stressing also that we maintain our hirings in 2020, as mentioned by Thomas, with special attention for the young and apprentices. 5,000 were recruited in France, and out of which 1,300 in our sales networks, and we are maintaining this goal for 2021. In practice, it means that during this lockdown period, we managed to maintain the integration itinerary of the newly hired one, including the apprentices, sometimes doing this from a distance. Team spirit was very strong during this challenging period. Our engagement rate, which we measure on a regular basis with our global internal survey, with the promoter score, the net promoter score of our employees increased by 14 points from December 2019 to December 2020, moving from 21 to 35. This continued to increase in 2021 and increased by a further 2 points during the most recent February survey. 2020, as you know, turned out when we launched our plan Driving Progress 2023. And there are some takeaways from this crisis, which we included into our thoughts. And we came up with three essential chapters in our human resources strategy, which is work organization, health, diversity, and inclusion. I will now spend some time on each of them. The first chapter of our HR policy is about work organization with the implementation of what we call smart working. An essential takeaway from the crisis, I'm sure you will agree with this, is that work organization will sustainably be marked by remote work in the coming years. Before the pandemic had anticipated for many years remote working for 32% of our employees around the globe. We took advantage of the last few months to work out our vision about the post-crisis work organization. What is this about when we talk about smart working? It's about a model which combines remote work and being at the office. We do not believe in only working from remotely. The employees who want may work from a distance on an average of 2 days a week. We believe that presence at the office will be an anchor, which is essential because it's where you have some social connections that the corporate culture can be disseminated. 70% of our employees rolled out the smart working organization model by the end of 2021. It is the case for the headquarters of Group or also for AXA France and the other entities. We'll be moving towards this by 2023. Working that way leads you to rethinking management methods for more responsibility, and will be supporting our managers with more autonomy and more delegation for employees. It means that we have to rethink the way the teams may even work better together. As I said, the second chapter of our HR policy is about developing a global overall health program. This crisis has shown us to what extent investing in health is key. Our ambition, as Thomas said, is to be a leader in terms of health and lead by example by protecting even better our employees. That's an obvious thing. We decided to put in place in November 2020 an ambitious health program and about protection for our employees, and I'm very happy about this. This program includes four key services. The first service is vaccination against seasonal flu, which we provide in every company and which we will broaden out to the COVID vaccination. It's the case already in France. We put this COVID vaccination by following the recommendations of the government, and we are ready to commit ourselves in other countries as soon as local authorities allow that. The second service is about the days of education and health prevention. Thirdly, medical checkups. And what I mean here, these are checkups that can come in the form of questionnaires or being present depending on the age. Finally, we put in place around the globe, as from the beginning of 2020, psychological support mechanisms. We were talking earlier about mental health. This is particularly important during this period of health crisis. Lastly, I would like to end by speaking about the third pillar of our strategy, which is strengthening our actions in favor of inclusion and diversity. When it comes to equality, male-female, we have been working on this for the past 15 years and have made significant progress in the past 5 years. We have sharply increased the share of women among our executives and top managers in our governance bodies, as you can see in these figures. Our strategy, which consisted in setting our goals over the years and working on succession plans and banking on mentoring to develop our feminine talents, are now bearing fruit. We have from now on over 26% of women in our group management committees, 34% of women among the members of the executive committees of our entities in the globe, and 30% of women among our CEOs. We are aware, of course, that we must continue with our efforts, and our commitment is to reach, to work and make progress to reach equality in our top 250 at the end of 2023. Wage fairness is something that we also are very keen on. We have taken commitments and have dedicated budgets to eliminate unwarranted remuneration differences in order to have equality in terms of wages in every part of the world by 2023 at the latest. We also reinforce all the standards and procedures in order to avoid the creation of differences in the future, for whether in terms of promotion or recruitments. I'd like to end by specifying that our commitment in favor of diversity goes beyond male-female equality. We act on other dimensions to turn AXA a company that is even more inclusive in favor of our employees, LGBT, in favor of our colleagues who have some disabilities. We enforce also our action to continue to diversify our hirings and internal promotions. This is very important to me in terms of social origins and cultural origins. We're developing our actions in regard to intergenerational dimension. AXA is an average age of 41 in the world and 43 years in Europe. In other words, we have four generations at work, and the transmission of expertise and of knowledge is essential in our business lines. To conclude, ladies and gentlemen, dear shareholders, the responsibility and the inclusion are the two pillars of our HR policy, and we are convinced these are powerful levers in terms of commitment and performance. Thank you very much for your attention. I thank Karim for this excellent presentation. Now, Céline Soupran, in charge of sustainable development, and Pascal Pistori for an exchange around the AXA climate change with Caroline Blas, an independent journalist. Acting for the climate is at the heart of our strategy. 2015, first actor to the AXA Climate Report, received many rewards. First place in 2017, alignment of Excel on the same restrictions. Creation of AXA Climate to reinforce our climate resilience in 2018, 2019, new commitments. 2019, warming of our investments, 2019 green investment goal, 2019 100 million euros allocated to transition bonds, 2019 exiting fully coal, 2020 integration of the climate into our strategy, top of 20% of our CO2 footprint by 2025, 2020 new bond transition of 100. I mean, we are relying on our expertise and act to reduce the climate risk inspired by our purpose in order to act on human progress by protecting what matters. Hello to everyone. Together, we're in this 2020 shareholders meeting. We have a new sequence dedicated to AXA's commitment in favor of the fight for the climate. This is part of the strategy of the group since 2015. To speak about this, Céline Soupran, in charge of AXA Sustainable Development. Hello, Céline and Pascal Clisdory in charge of investments and the asset liabilities management. First question, Pascal. We've just seen this through this video. AXA is a major player who has been committed in favor of the climate for the past decade. You were a forerunner. What were, according to you, the main steps that allowed to put this overall approach in place? Look, I think we were forerunners, and we want to stay this in order to have more progress. More than 10 years ago, we put in place a governance dedicated to responsible investments to steer our initiatives in our investment portfolios. Initially, we moved out of oil, palm oil, and then we initiated our exit from the coal, and we so this is something that we really came up very strongly. We have been selling 3.7 billion of assets in order to lighten up our coal and no longer finance coal. By the way, after that, we announced our total exit from the coal business in 2030 for the OECD countries and 2040 for the other countries in the world. There's another major step in social and governance environmental criteria. Can you tell us something about this? Yes, we include it into our the internal rating of our, especially our bonds, the ESG parameters, which allow to make sure that there's a resilience of our investments over the long term. I'm convinced that to ensure that we have resilience, if we invest in a company, we must be able to ensure have some visibility about the energy plan of that company and how that company will be implementing such a plan.
We've just talked about the investment-related actions. What about insurance? Well, we were precursors in investment, but we're very active too when it comes to insurance. That's our business, after all. Now, very briefly, we gave commitments in 2015 on the investment side, but we also added exclusions to our insurance policies, and gradually we started to exit from coal in terms of insurance cover and also oil sands, that are two sources of energy that are most carbon intensive these days. In terms of exclusions, our objective was to come up with innovative solutions that our clients would expect to see. They're also concerned about climate change. So our objective for the coming year is indeed to develop green insurance premia, that is, green services and products for our clients. And, for example, we try to foster the right kind of behavior. If they're looking to purchase a new vehicle, we try to promote electric vehicles, hybrid vehicles, and so on. We're also integrating the circular economy in claims management. We're reusing spare parts that have already been used, and also proposing construction on the basis of green standards after a fire or some other claim. And also, we're supporting clients by new kinds of insurance, hydrogen, renewable energy sources. And these are some of the innovative solutions we provide to our clients. And last week, we announced that AXA is heading up a coalition among other international players, where together we're going to set down a net zero pathway for insurance businesses. We're doing with Aviva and Allianz, for example, peer companies, so as to set down common metrics and methodologies that will enable us to build up this pathway together and then lead up to commitments we hope in Glasgow at COP26. And also we want to work with other financial industry players and insurance players. Of course, you need to be exemplary internally as well. And how are you taking care of the environment in your own operations within AXA? Well, of course, that's a must. Before talking about insurance and investment, you've got to, of course, do the same back home. So that's our buildings, it's our fleets of vehicles, it's when we travel to go and see clients. We're an international scale group, and we've already come a long way. Between 2012 and 2020, we've reduced by more than one half our carbon emissions in respect of our own activities. That's quite a lot. Now, obviously, 2020 was a particular year, and the dip was even bigger, actually, in 2020. So in our new strategic plan, we want to reduce by 20% further our CO2 emissions in our own activities between now and 2025. And also, we're taking action on the digital plan. We have a digital plan. We are an insurance business. It's a financial activity. So we produce a lot of digital material, and especially in the COVID context with people working from home. So we set up a whole action plan to bring down our footprint in terms of choosing the right architectures for the information systems, choosing where we store data and data centers, the IT hardware. Yeah, be digitally sober, I would say. So our digital activities have not exceeded in terms of carbon emissions globally, have actually overshot civil aviation in general on planet Earth. I mean, so we've got to try and make sure we make the right defensive choices. If we're to be carbon neutral, we've got to offset the remaining emissions and buy carbon credits to do so. Yes, these are concrete commitments, Pascal Christery. There are challenges to do with societal transitions, but also the low carbon economy will require groups like AXA to prepare for that transition in very concrete ways. What have you been doing on that? Yeah, we've given very substantial commitments for the energy transition. Firstly, we decided to align our asset portfolios with the 1.5 degree pathway by 2050, along the lines of the Paris Agreement. So we want to be net zero in carbon emissions by that date. That's our aim. Also, we've defined a green investment plan. Now, that's green bonds and investments in renewable infrastructures or investments in buildings that are low carbon, low consumption buildings. And 24 billion euro is the worth of that. Initially, it was only 12, but we doubled it. It's now 24. And we also issued a bond, a subordinated debt recently, green bond. So it's 25 billion euro now. So in the medium term, concretely, we want to bring down our carbon footprint in our portfolio down by 20% between now and 2025, after a drop of 31%. Already between 2015 and 2019. So we're combining our forces with partners in alliances, as Céline was saying, the Net Zero Asset Honour Alliance, as we call it. That brings together the biggest institutional investors on planet Earth. And altogether, we think that we can do something worthwhile, access figures, metrics, and set common ambitions so as to enable us all to transition efficiently in terms of the companies that we fund. Well, an important figure is the 1.5 degree by 2050. That's the pathway you've opted for, but it's a big challenge. How are we going to get there? How are we going to get there faster than we've been getting up to now? And how can you motivate economic players to move into a green transition kind of mode? Well, firstly, we're very active, as I was saying, in renewable energy sources, because 20% of our infrastructure portfolio right now is made up of assets that are infrastructures in renewables, wind farms, hydropower, and so on, and also new technologies, as Céline mentioned, hydrogen and everything that's storage and distribution of new energy sources. So we're shareholders of several companies, like a Spanish company that's developing renewable energy sources, and also a company called ELL, European Locomotive Leasing, ELL, that operates electric locomotives made by Siemens. And also we're going to finance 1.9 billion euro worth for the Société du Grand Paris to develop greener transportation in the Paris area, urban area. We're also sponsoring financing tools that widen the scope of pure green investments. So we defend the hypothesis that several shades of green are what we want, so that companies that are financed can implement their own transition. We are sponsoring a new tool called the Transition Bond, twice, 100 million euro, with BPCE and CACIB, respectively, and so as to foster transition in the right way. Well, Céline, AXA was a precursor since 2015, even since 2010, as we said, and more recently, the AXA Group has put in the fight for the climate in a into Driving Progress 2023, its strategic plan. So what's the follow-up now? Where do we go from here? Well, we've got to support the move by onboarding all of our people in the organization. They're already very motivated about this. We saw the setting up of a spontaneous collective to deal with climate issues in our entities in France, acting inside and outside the company. We have AXA volunteers that are mobilizing their efforts for NGOs outside the company, and a lot of volunteering goes on in the company and outside. But we've got to go further. And often we draw a parallel between the digital transformation that we went through 10 years ago and what's happening now, this transformation around the climate and the transition. And it impacts human resources and the upskilling of our people in these respects. So that's why we're going to offer our 120,000 employees training on the climate. So to give them scientific basis about the phenomena to do with climate change and how to mitigate, how to adapt and so on. And then what does it involve in their job that they do as an underwriter, as a claims manager, as somebody in charge of IT architecture, whatever, or in terms of a procurement officer. So so that they can factor in these challenges day to day and in their jobs. So also to reward efforts. That's the idea. The efforts put in, Thomas presented in his introduction, our AXA for Progress Index that consists of 7 concrete quantified objectives. And when the results are achieved, they're built into the compensation schemes of our people. 30% of the variable component of their pay of 5,000 senior managers and middle managers in the group built into their pay package. So that's the idea, to engage all of our people to achieve these objectives. So, so set a value on and reward. They're the key words here, I think. And it helps us to better understand access commitments in favour of the climate and to understand what you're doing daily, tangibly, out in your operations. Thank you to both of you. Thank you, Caroline Bliss and Céline Soubran and Pascal Cristori. And now we'll give the floor to Étienne Bouin-Laurent, who will present the financial results for 2020. Thank you, Denis. Hello to everybody. Dear shareholders, I'm very happy to be with you today to present the main performance indicators of AXA in 2020. I'd like to start off with the revenues, which stood at €97 billion in 2020, more or less flat, minus 1%. It shows the soundness of our group in a difficult context. All of our priority segments, that is commercial, P&C, health and protection, recorded fine performance levels. This demonstrates the relevance of our strategy. The revenues of our priority segments, representing 2/3 of the total, progressed by 3% in the year. If we look at this trend in a more fine-tuned manner, well, we recorded strong growth in the first quarter, then a dip in the second quarter, because of the strict measures enacted to fight against the pandemic in our different markets. After that, we bounced back in Q3, then we saw speeding up in Q4, in particular in our target segments, up by 5% for that last quarter. This places us in a very conducive dynamic for 2021. We're quite confident for the future, especially the pursuit of the pricing dynamics in commercial P&C and a growing demand that we see for health and protection solutions. I'd now like to move on to the revenues business line by business line. In P&C, for a start, it went up by 1% for the year. In commercial P&C, we recorded a growth of 2% for the year, and it bounced back in the second half of the year. In particular, the pricing dynamic sped up, especially in AXA XL, with price upswings greater than 20% in insurance. This dynamic was continued in 2021 and will continue to have a positive impact on the growth of our margins. The personal P&C activity was more or less flat in 2020. The revenues went down slightly, -1%, because of the drop in the commercial dynamics during the lockdowns in France and in Europe, particularly in motor insurance, knowing that prices remained flat. 2020 was, of course, first and foremost marked by the COVID-19 pandemic. We confirmed the overall impact of 1.5 billion euro due to COVID-19 in terms of our earnings, in line with our estimates that we announced in June 2020. In the latter part of the year, we recorded an additional impact in commercial P&C, especially in AXA XL, which was offset by a reduction in the claims ratio in personal insurance. In business interruption, we adjusted the claims so as to take account of the introduction of new lockdown measures, decisions handed down by the courts in the U.K. and Australia also. Also, there are still a few uncertainties concerning proceedings still underway in France. The cancellations of events remained flat. On the other lines, that's lending, financial lines, liability, and travel insurance, we increased our reserves even though we recorded a very small number of claims declared up to now. These effects, at the same time, were partly offset by a drop in the frequency of the claims in personal insurance, especially in motor insurance. In order to contain our exposure in the future, we revised, we reworded the clauses in our business interruption damage-free policies all around the group by making quite explicit, very clearly explicit, the exclusion factors. The deployment of these clauses is underway when the policies are due to be renewed. It takes place. So, as I've just said, in terms of property casualty, our underlying earnings were impacted by the pandemic to the tune of 1.5 billion euro, and to a lesser degree by the higher level of natural catastrophes with a strong frequency of hurricanes in the North Atlantic area in 2020. In detail, the upswing in the technical margin is greater than the drop in the financial results, and we recorded a lesser level of PYD. The result of this is that, excluding COVID and Nat Cats, the P&C underlying earnings would have progressed by 2%. This is confirmed by the evolution of the combined ratio in P&C, excluding COVID and Nat Cat. This would have been improved by 0.5 point. So we remain confident in our ability to continue to improve our technical margin so as to achieve our objective of a combined ratio of 93% between now and 2023. Let's now focus on life and savings. The product mix is improving the whole time here. The revenues went down by 6% because of the drop in savings in the general account in the context of the pandemic, especially in France and in Italy. The revenues in protection is resilient, up 2%. In France, we're continuing to see a strong demand for products that are unit-linked, representing 48% of the revenues in the individual savings. That is 10 points more than the average of the market. The net inflows reveal a positive trend in the business mix. Fewer guaranteed rate activities, more technical risks and commissions connected with our strategy, of course. For the future, we anticipate a bouncing back in the revenues in life and savings according as the impact of COVID will diminish with continued growth in protection and unit-linked products. Let's now look at the underlying earnings in life and savings. The underlying earnings went down by 7%, driven by a lower technical margin because of the impact in the first half of the extension of the protection cover, the drop in the discount rate for annuities, and the drop in surrenders. The investment margin remained flat. The drop in the income from investment was offset by the drop in the lending rates for clients. The expenditure went down, reflecting the measures to limit cost in different geographical areas. The technical margin should improve in 2021 compared with the levels we saw in 2020, whilst the investment margin should slightly dip given the low level of the interest rates currently. Let's now have a look at health. The revenues of this business line post growth of 6% in 2020 in all of our geographies, and in personal insurance and collective insurance schemes. In Asia, the revenues went up by 9%, with an upswing in volumes in China and Japan and an upswing in prices in Hong Kong. The underlying earnings down by 1%, the growth in revenues being offset by an upswing in the combined ratio. In France, the gains made thanks to the reduction of the frequency of claims during the lockdown were offset by exceptional taxing and the French health reform. For the future, we anticipate a return to normality in the growth pathway of our earnings in line with the trend that we will see in the revenue figures. Let's now move on to asset management, which continues to be shored up by alternative asset management. The assets under management went up by 7%, reaching a record level of 858 billion euro, plus 14% for the assets managed by AXA IM Alternatives. The net inflows stand at 40 billion euro in the sectors that are core, alternatives, and in our Asian joint ventures. Income was higher thanks to the alternatives representing about 40% of the total inflows, incoming revenues. The underlying earnings went up by 6%, reflecting largely the increase in the assets under management, a fine performance in a difficult year. Going forward, you can expect that we will pursue the growth we've been seeing in our alternative asset management activity with a higher margin, contributing to about one-half of our profits, and it will continue to be a very attractive business line indeed in this current environment we have with low interest rates. All told, the underlying earnings of the group stand at 4.3 billion in 2020 as opposed to 6.5 billion in 2019. This trend can be explained by three factors: the deconsolidation of Equitable Holdings, the impact of the pandemic, and the level of natural catastrophes beyond a normalized level. The net income stands at 3.2 billion euro. The net capital gains achieved stand at 337 million euro, an amount that's quite superior to the one we had in the first half. That reflects market conditions that were more conducive in the second half of 2020. On the cash flow of the holding company, we've continued to avail of a lot of headroom in terms of cash, with 4.2 billion euro of cash in 2020, a figure that's higher than the target bracket of 1 to 3 billion euro. The main drivers of the cash flow movements during the course of the year were an upstreaming of cash of 4.8 billion euro by our entities, 1 billion euro of proceeds from divestments of businesses in Central and Eastern Europe, and 1.2 billion of gains on stock derivatives and by way of raising of commercial paper. These items were partly offset by the payout of a dividend for 1.7 billion euro, the holding company cost for 1 billion euro, and also the reconstitution of the cash flow headroom at the level of the entity, standing at 1.4 billion euro. Let's now move on to the balance sheet.
Our equity first increased by 1.7 billion euros to reach 71.6 billion euros, the net income, and the increase of unrealized capital gains due to lower interest rates were partly compensated due to the currency effect linked to the reinforcing of the euro relative to the main currencies and the improvement of our pension services. Now, the debt of the group, as we said, we significantly lowered our debt level in the past 2 years at a level which is now in the 25 to 28 target range. In 2020, we in particular reimbursed 1.7 billion euros of financial debt. As you noticed in the presentation made by Thomas, AXA has a solvency rate which is very high at 200%. It even increased by 2 points since the 31st of December 2019, despite the adverse impact of financial markets. And this, in particular, thanks to the integration of AXA XL into the group's internal model. This reflects the benefits of diversification resulting from the combination of XL with AXA, which allowed to cut on the requirements of capital. Since 2020, the AXA share price had significantly underperformed relative to the European insurance sector. This was due to our AXA XL subsidiary was impacted by the crisis and by the specific situation of the French, which led to the non-payment of half of our dividend last year. After that, the AXA shares outperformed the insurance sector, recording a performance of 58% over 1 year against the 42% for the stocks insurance, which is our benchmark. This performance was driven by the resolute actions which we took to limit volatility and re-establish the profitability of AXA XL and through the publishing of a very good level of solvency at the end of 2020, which allows the payment of a dividend back to normal. As you noticed, in 2020, we are able to maintain our commercial performance and great financial solidity while protecting our clients. The momentum of our revenues is good. We were able to generate a high level of underlying earnings at 4.3 billion euros. Our solvency ratio is sound at 200%, and the cash levels of the holding are above our target. The outlook for our main financial indicators are positive, and we trust our goals in our plan as communicated last December. Thanks to all of this, we are able now to pay out a dividend of 1.43 euros to our shareholders. It testifies the solidity of the group and our trust in 2021 in our Driving Progress 2023 strategic plan. Thank you very much for your attention. I thank Etienne Bois-Laurent for his presentation. I will now ask Jean-Pierre Clamadieu to present the governance of the company and the compensation remuneration policy of its top managers. Ladies and gentlemen, dear shareholders, as the chair of the Governance and Remuneration Committee and independent director, I'm extremely pleased to report both about the functioning of AXA's governance and also about our remuneration policy for our top managers. It's a topic on which you'll have an opportunity to express yourselves through a series of votings. On the screen, the current composition of our board, it includes to this day 16 members, 10 women and 6 men and 9 nationalities. The percentage of women at this board, not taking into account members representing employees or shareholders, employees, is today at 54% in agreement with regulation. This diversity of women is combined with a variety of different functions, roles, and professional expertise, which promotes depth and quality of our discussions. When we need to choose new directors, we pay close attention to the expertise and skills that they may provide. We look for to strike an appropriate balance among these various experiences and skills in terms of age, nationality, and so on, and culture. And also, we need to assess the independence of our directors in light of the Code AFEP-MEDEF recommendation. We considered early this year 11 of our members out of 16 that could be characterized as independent directors. On the slide on the screen, you see a representation, a summary of the functioning of the board. The board relies on the work of 3 committees who prepare the decisions through detailed recommendations and analysis. As my role as an independent director, I ensure that all the independent directors may play their role in a practical way or participate with the chair of the board and the CEO in the preparation of each board meeting. We review together the timetable of the meetings, their agendas, as well as the documents sent to the board members to make sure that these documents allow quality discussions. it behooves the board, as you know, to take the most significant decisions, especially the split of the function of chair and CEO, and appoint the CEO, and then the board appoints its chair and then has to approve the strategic orientations that are the most important ones in our company. As announced last March, Mr. Denis Duverne, our chair, will be leaving us, scheduled his position as a chair following his term in April 2022. We are concerned about identifying his successor. Following an in-depth preparation process of the succession undertaken by the Governance and Remuneration Committee in the last 2 years, your board decided unanimously several weeks ago to appoint Antoine Grossin-Grainville to succeed him. The wide experience of Antoine's his experience in terms of experience in business and the public service, his experience at the head of a firm of lawyers in Paris, will be assets to help Access continue its development and have future successes. His appointment will be enforced in 1 year at the end of our next AGM. It will help Denis Antoine to cooperate in closely for 1 year to have the most efficient succession. If we look now at the work of the board of directors, we saw, of course, a very sustained activity this year. The board gathered 14 times, nearly exclusively in the form of distance or remote attendance, with 97% being present on average. The three board meetings held 18 meetings 2020 with a presence of 100% dealing with the main topics that we had to deal with. I can mention some, the group strategy, how to manage the health crisis, AXA XL's transformation, the disposals and significant acquisitions, and also looking at the half-year and annual accounts now, distribution payout and capital management policy and internal assessment of risk and solvency, ORSA report, the internal model of AXA and written policies established as part of Solvency II. The succession of the board chairman also was at the heart of our discussion. The makeup of the committees of the board, the examination of the group strategy in terms of social responsibility were very active due to specificities that we all know. As we do each year, we assessed our functioning. That exercise this year was undertaken internally. There are sometimes certain years we ask for external advisors to help us dig deep into things, and there are other years we consider that a questionnaire and direct exchanges between each or director and the chair allow through answers to the questionnaire and individual interviews to get their opinion about from the members. And I also exchange with each one of my director colleagues to evaluate the performance of Denis, our chair, and provide an additional look to that assessment. We assess, which is very important, the personal contribution of each director, which is communicated to him during an individual interview by the chairman. We have an assessment mechanism which is quite thorough. The overall conclusion of such self-assessment, the main identified progress axes were looked in detail, first of all, by the Governance and Remuneration Committee, which issues recommendations which are discussed and approved by the board. They were done in December last. The conclusion of that assessment is a favorable opinion expressed about the functioning of the board. The recommendations coming were considered as widely followed up. However, as is the case each year, we try to further improve the way we operate. Obviously, the health crisis, with the constraints that we have in terms of distance meetings, have to be taken into account, and by adjusting our way of working, we're able to do our best given the context in which physical meetings are not possible so far. the main points of improvement identified during the self-assessment exercises deal with the makeup of the board, particular attention being paid to the selection of the future directors in order to continue to benefit at the board of insurance-related, the digital expertise, marketing skills, but also there's a need to see new directors who have experience and who are still working and contribute to provide an additional look at the way we operate and contribute again to the quality of the decisions of that board. We also noted the need to pay special attention to the succession process of the financial and audit committees. They require special skills and expertise, and in this field, we need to plan things ahead of time, as you will see later on. We also concluded that there was a need to propose a simplification of the CEO remuneration framework. This is something that we will talk about probably next year. As I said, we need to develop a remote culture functioning. Hopefully, physical meetings will be possible again. We have adjusted the way we meet, and we have multiplied informal contact on a two-by-two basis, one-on-one, to make sure that we can continue efficiently. We organize at the beginning of each year a preliminary session to allow directors before the meeting to express freely about each one of our topics, the priorities, where they feel we should discuss things most. This is what I wanted to share with you when it comes to the functioning of our board of directors. Then I suggest now, slide number seven, to come back to the resolution pertaining the position of the board, which will be proposed later on to renew the term of Ramón de Oliveira. You see his picture and his curriculum vitae. He's been since 2009 the director of our company. He's now the chair of the financial committee and member of the audit committee. According to the recommendation of the governance and remuneration committee, the board wants to put forward renewal of his term in order to continue to benefit from his wide experience and his in-depth knowledge of the financial and the insurance sectors. If his term is renewed, Ramón, who's a director of has been a director of your company for 12 years, can no longer be considered as an independent director in light of the AFEP-MEDEF recommendations. However, we adjusted our internal rules so that on a temporary basis he can continue to act as a chair of the financial committee in order to prepare his succession. This is a case where we paid close attention by proposing to renew Ramón's term to keep at the board skills which are very important, which he has. And I suggest that we move to slide number eight. We will also suggest during this meeting to appoint Mr. Guillaume Faury and Ramón Fernández as directors. Guillaume Faury will be appointed in replacing Mrs. Hélène Sarkinsis, who has decided not to ask for a renewal of her term as a director. And I take this opportunity to thank her very warmly for her contribution to our work in the past few years. When it comes to the appointment of Guillaume Faury, of course, his profile as an executive manager was important for us. He works in a company with a global presence. He's a CEO of Airbus now. He was also in charge of research and development, a member of the management board of PSA Peugeot Citroën from 2009 and 2013. Let's view a short film of Guillaume Faury.
Since 2019. After a few years in the flight test center of the French Ministry of Defense, I joined Airbus in 1998 in what was called Eurocopter at that time, now known as Airbus Helicopters. I started my career as a flight test engineer. I have managed projects, managed teams, to finally lead wider organizations. Through my career in aeronautics, defense, and automotive, I've built experience in innovation, industry, business and international, and also sometimes in managing complex and challenging situations whilst leading transformation. I enjoy being part of a team and serving a common cause with a team. Placing people at the center of the business matters to me. I would be genuinely pleased to join the AXA Board of Directors, AXA being a benchmark company in its sector. I'm particularly interested by the spread of AXA's activities, by its international reach, its role in society, and the fast-evolving business context in which it operates. Last but not least, I would be extremely glad to work together with the experienced and inspiring set of people in this board of directors and to grow and learn with them. I will bring my industrial, international, and technological experience, as well as my personal approach to leading a company, and I'm looking forward to sharing my contribution with the board of directors.
Hopefully, you were convinced with this video about the specific qualities that Guillaume Faury could provide to our board. We are very happy that an experienced leader such as him has accepted to apply to your general meeting. Now, in favor of Ramon Fernandez, we, of course, have selected his wide experience and his in-depth experience of the financial matters of regulation. He's a deputy CEO of AXA, of Orange. He was in charge of the Treasury Department representing France or the state at the board of CNP Assurance. That was from 2009 and 2014. Let's now see a short film pertaining to Ramon. My name is Ramon Fernandez. I'm the deputy CEO of Orange in charge of finance, performance, and development. I joined Orange in 2014 after about 20 years in the public service, where I held mostly financial positions. I began my career in 1993 at the General Directorate of the French Treasury, where I took a close interest in the regulation and supervision of the financial sector and the markets in international finance and in the challenges of the state as shareholder. Before becoming the Director General between 2009 and 2014, I had the opportunity to spend 2 years in Washington at the IMF at the time of crisis in emerging countries, and then to serve as an advisor to French political leaders, the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Labour and Social Affairs as head of office, and the President of the French Republic as his economic advisor. Throughout those years, and since I joined Orange, I have been passionate about economic and financial issues, European and international matters, strategic and regulatory concerns, about combining growth and financial security, short-term and long-term. The insurance industry is at the crossroads of all these issues. I'm committed to bring this experience and my appetite for debate as a vector of values to the board of directors of your great company, if you trust me. The board examined the situation of these two candidates in light of the AFEP-MEDEF recommendations, and we decided that they could be considered as independent.
So subject to a favorable vote, of course, later on in the meeting, the size of the board of directors would be temporarily increased in order to enable your board to avail of the presence of an executive manager in office from a multinational group, that is, that doesn't hold any external office, and also the future chairman of the Financial Committee, which would make it possible to help the current chairman to efficiently prepare his succession at the head of that committee. So after this presentation now of the functioning of the AXA governance in 2020, we should perhaps move on to look at the compensation policy for the senior managers of the company. In line with the legal provisions in this respect, your meeting will be asked to give its opinion on the components of compensation paid during or granted in respect of financial 2020 to each corporate officer and also on the policy concerning compensation applicable to the corporate officers in the company for fiscal 2021. So all told, there are six resolutions that were put to the vote. Three resolutions concerning the compensation ex post of the chairman of the board, of the CEO and the board members, and three resolutions concerning their compensation ex ante. So in this context, you will see summed up on the chart here on the screen the different components of the compensation of the senior managers and the top management people in general in AXA. The compensation, the cash component of compensation in the short term is constituted of a fixed component and part of the annual variable compensation. Then we have the items of deferred compensation, which are made up of the other part of the variable annual compensation and performance shares. So this compensation structure aims at fostering convergence of interest on the management side with the interests of the company and its shareholders in the medium and long term. In preparing the proposals for the board concerning the compensation of the CEO, the Compensation and Governance Committee appraises all of the components of compensation. We also look at the practices in the benchmark market, that is the peer companies of AXA at European level and global level, and the objective here is to propose a structure that's consistent and coherent and levels of compensation that are competitive. The idea is to encourage performance and align the levels of compensation actually received with the earnings of the company. So the Compensation and the Governance Committee regularly reviews, of course, the general principles of the compensation policy of the group. And to this extent, we are very attentive to internal fairness and the fact of taking account of the individual and collective performance put in. So the board, on the basis of a proposal of its Compensation and Governance Committee, decided therefore to set the annual target compensation in cash of the CEO at €2,900,000. This compensation is broken down into fixed compensation and target variable compensation. The annual fixed compensation of the CEO is €1,450,000, and the annual variable target compensation, which is fully subjected to demanding performance conditions and aligned with the strategy of the group, stands at €1,450,000. The determination of the amount of the total compensation of the CEO and the balance between and among the different components, fixed and variable, is always underpinned, in particular, by a study conducted by an outside firm concerning the practices in terms of compensation for similar posts in a sample of companies in the CAC 40 index and in the main companies internationally in the financial industry. Also, in order to tie in the CEO into value creation in the long term, the Board of Directors grants every year to him long-term incentives in the form of performance shares. These performance shares are fully subjected to demanding performance conditions, internal and external ones, and do not, therefore, guarantee any minimum gain. Also, the CEO does not avail of any supplementary defined benefit pension scheme. He's a beneficiary, just like all of the management staff in the entities of the group in France. He's therefore a beneficiary of the performance share plan dedicated for pension purposes, in respect of which there are grants totally subjected to performance conditions that are conducted annually. Finally, he avails of an indemnification in the event of termination of his office, subjected to performance conditions and the initially fixed amount of 12 months of his compensation package is increased by an additional month each new year of seniority put in without, of course, in total exceeding 24 months in all. So I would add that the target compensation of the CEO has remained unchanged since his appointment in 2016 and will remain also identical in 2021. No change there. Of course, we have to annually revisit the variable compensation granted each year. And we did it, of course, for 2020 for the CEO. The evaluation of the annual performance of the CEO is something that relies on two main components: the performance of the group, that accounts for 70% of the total, and his individual performance, representing 30% of the total. The performance of the group is appraised as a function of the development of five criteria: the underlying earnings per share, the adjusted return on equity, the revenues in strategic sectors that are priority in commercial P&C and also protection and health, that are the growth priorities for the group, also the promoter score by clients, and the overheads excluding commissions. The indicators taken on board are directly connected with the strategic orientations of the group, and they're always supported by the achievement of an amount or a score, a target one that will be established on a preliminary basis. On the screen, you see the relative weights of each of these indicators and their rates of achievement, respectively, in 2020. As you can see, the results of the calculation grid were very substantially impacted by the crisis due to COVID-19. Given the demanding nature of the objectives, the strict application of the formula defined by the board at the start of 2020 to appraise the performance of the group would position the total percentage of achievement of the objectives at 35%. If, however, we cancel out completely the impact of the health crisis, we recalled, Etienne recalled the impact of that earlier for us, we would obtain a global percentage of achievement of objectives in terms of group performance, that would be 68%. So in order to determine the appropriate level of variable compensation for the CEO for 2020, the board, in addition to levels of achievement of objectives presented just now, took into consideration several parameters, especially the amount of the dividend paid to the shareholders of the company in respect of fiscal 2019, corresponding to 51% of the amount initially announced to the market in spite of a difficult macroeconomic context, the fact that we did not have recourse to public aid in any of the countries where the group has operations, or also the public commitment of the group to protect jobs and the compensation of its employees during the crisis and the possibility for most of its employees to work from home, as Carrie May recalled earlier. After in-depth discussions and on the basis of a proposal by the Compensation and Governance Committee, your Board of Directors decided to adjust the score that would have resulted from a mechanical enforcement of the criteria by taking on board the average of the scores with and without neutralisation of the impact of the health crisis. That led us to setting down the score of for the achievement of the objectives at 51%. We thought that this score, 51%, was more representative of the performance of the group and its management team in 2020. And it enabled us to align the interests of the management with the interests of the company and its shareholders in line with our compensation policy in this group. We, of course, looked at the individual performance of the CEO that you see on this slide right now, which is appreciated as a function of specific objectives that are revisited every year. Different indicators and objectives that are qualitative and some are quantifiable as well, they're all set, therefore, by the board, different objectives set down by the board in an assignment letter drawn up at the start of every year. So for 2020, the Board of Directors evaluated the performance, individual performance of Thomas Buberl as per the following objectives set down in his assignment letter. You heard about them at the start of the meeting. The transformation of AXA XL, the improvement of the stability and the simplicity of the balance sheet of the group, the development of the strategic plan 2021 to 2023 for the group, the development of innovation, the fulfilment of certain strategic initiatives in terms of human resources, and also the achievement of strategic initiatives in terms of corporate social responsibility. So via these criteria, we evaluated the individual performance of your CEO. For 2020, it came out at 119.5%. Each of these criteria, as you see here, were evaluated. And the effective variable compensation in respect of 2020 to be paid to the CEO, subject to your approval, of course, at this AGM, the figure stands therefore at €1,036,750. That is 71.5% of his target variable compensation. in order to enforce the compensation policy voted through by your shareholders' meeting, the Board of Directors has renewed for the CEO a mechanism for deferred payment of a part that's equal to 30% of his variable compensation in respect of fiscal 2020. In line with this mechanism, the deferred amount of the variable compensation will be paid in two a month, that is in 2022, and then another instalment in 2023. The amount actually paid out could vary as a function of the trend in the stock price of AXA during the period when deferment takes place, within the limitation of a floor equal to 80% of the deferred amount and a cap equal to 120% of the amount deferred. The introduction of this deferred part within variable compensation, even though it's not required right now by enforceable French regulations, the idea here is, however, to reinforce the alignment of AXA with the practices and regulations that prevail internationally in the financial services industry when it comes to senior management compensation. So I suggest at this stage we should review the remuneration of the chairman of the board. In line with the recommendations of the AFEP-MEDEF code, the board considered that the structure of compensation, the most appropriate here, was to pay to the chairman of the board just fixed compensation. In order to determine the amount of this fixed compensation, the board took account of the widened tasks that it decided to grant to Denis Duverne in his capacity as chairman, and consulted an outside specialised office in this regard. Also, we took account of the fact that Denis Duverne, who went on pension on the 1st of September 2016, decided to forego the payment of the annuity which is due to him in respect of the supplementary pension scheme, the annual amount standing at approximately €750,000. Denis Duverne decided to not avail of this only at such time as he would leave office as chairman of the board without asking for any retrospective payment. The Board of Directors consequently decided to set the amount of the annual compensation of the chairman of the Board of Directors at €1,200,000. This amount has remained unchanged since he was appointed in 2016. Finally, the next slide shows us that AXA is pursuing a performance share grant plan for its people in France and internationally. Almost 7,000 people have availed of these grants in 2020 and 2021, irrespective of their positioning in the line management, but subjected to performance conditions. The performance criteria, revisited by the board at the start of this year, concern the performance of the entity to which the beneficiary belongs, 60% of the total there, performance in terms of corporate social responsibility, 30%, and the relative financial performance of the group, 10% worth. Finally, in line with the best marketplace practices and the recommendations of the financial industry regulators and the other stakeholders, the performance shares granted to the CEO, as well as being subjected to a vesting period of 3 years, are accompanied by a lock-up period, compulsory one, of 2 years. In March 2021, 133,539 performance shares with an IFRS value of €1,938,986 were granted to the CEO. Now, the health crisis affected the variable compensation in terms of cash, and this health crisis will also substantially impact the rate of achievement of the past performance share plans, given the demanding nature of their performance conditions. So that's why, in these exceptional circumstances, the Board of Directors, after looking at the scope of the impact, which should result in rates of achievement varying from 55% to 65% in 2021 and 30% to 45% in 2022 and 2023, and the scope of the impact, which could affect substantially more than 7,000 employees, we decided therefore to not adjust the 2018 plan, and the shares will be definitively vested in 2021, so that the impact of the crisis will be marked in the way for the beneficiaries of that plan, and also adjust partially, on particular points, the 2019-2020 plans. For these latter plans, the criterion of the floor level of one of the performance conditions, that is the adjusted earnings per share, that will be adjusted for all of the beneficiaries and set at 70% of the amount of earnings required to achieve the target rate, whereas initially we had proposed, when the plans were set up, a threshold of 80%. This adjustment is submitted to approval here at your meeting today to be applicable to the CEO, and the effect of it would be to preserve the retention value of the 2019 and 2020 plans in the event of a good performance by the group during the vesting period. This adjustment would make it possible for the senior managers to acquire a maximum of 80% of their initial grants. We think here again, after an attentive review, that this approach will enable us to align performance conditions of the plans with the objectives of the strategic plan for the period between now and 2023 in the group, whilst maintaining a demanding level for the achievement of the performance conditions. Also, I would underscore that the granting of performance shares, the granting takes place without any dilution for the shareholder, given the choice made of delivering existing shares for these purposes. The items of compensation of the senior managers of BACSA that we've reviewed just now in detail are described, of course, in full, in a detailed manner, in the Universal Registration Document for 2020 that was made available to you on the website of the company. And, of course, I would urge you to consult it if you want more details. Finally, to conclude, I'd like to say a few words about the group's policy in terms of employee shareholdership and the involvement of employees in the equity base of AXA as shareholders. Now, AXA, for a long time, has been pursuing a willful policy for employee shareholdership. Every year, the group proposes to its staff members in France and internationally an employee shareholdership transaction that we call the share plan in our jargon, in the form of a capital increase that is reserved for them. In 2020, almost 17,000 employees in 37 countries took part in the capital increase. Total amount subscribed more than 88 million euro. That was the issuance of more than 6 million new shares. In order to eliminate the diluting nature of the share plan offering, as in previous years, we bought back and then cancelled an equivalent number of shares. So on the 31st of December 2020, the employees working for the group held 4.3% of the equity and 6.2% of the voting rights in the company. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank you for your attention, and I hope I have covered these complex topics with you in a simple and straightforward manner. Thank you. Thank you, Jean-Pierre Clamadieu, for this presentation. I suggest now we look at another video representing a shareholder. My name is Florian Lefebvre. I'm 38 years of age. I'm a single man. I'm a sales manager in telecommunications. Now, the first share I bought was a Schneider Electric share. I was working with that company, and I was interested in buying a share of theirs, or shares, so I embarked on my shareholder journey. Now, I wanted to invest in shares so as to diversify my investments and also hold a piece of a real company. And my first AXA share I purchased a bit more than a year ago now, when I started to diversify my portfolio of shares. Now, why AXA? Well, I'm interested in companies because I feel there's some kind of convergence between them and me personally and or professionally. And I had friends working in AXA myself, so I heard often about AXA from them. And also, I hadn't any shares of in the financial industry or the insurance industry myself up to then. So it was important for me. It was a major move because I'm not a speculator at heart. I tend to invest in, let's say, the medium term. So the price of the share is important, but I'm not a speculator. I look at the yield, the total return, and that's why I invested in the AXA share. So, since COVID has hit us all, I've seen AXA reacting in a way that's quite in line with my own approach. So, my interests as a shareholder have been preserved in the middle of the storm by the company, and also as a consumer, I felt my interests were taken care of as a citizen. Where the role of an insurance company for me is to be around when you need their help. So I think AXA got the balance right in its response during the crisis.
The report about the corporate governance established in line with Articles L2537 and the next, and L2210 and 20 of the Commercial Code are on page 485. I will now turn it over to our auditors, Mrs. Bénédicte Vignon from PricewaterhouseCoopers and Mr. Maxime Simonet from the Lazard firm, who will present a summary. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, dear shareholders. We have issued this year 7 reports to present to a shareholders' meeting. I will present our reports on the annual consolidated accounts and our report on third-party agreements. I will turn it over to Bénédicte Vignon, who will present our reports on transactions related to capital. With regard to our reports on the annual and consolidated accounts, the fundamental aim of our mission consists in obtaining reasonable assurance about the regularity, truthfulness, and true picture of the accounts about the fact that do not include any significant misstatements by relying on the audit work undertaken by our two firms in the significant entities of the AXA Group. First of all, on the annual accounts of the parent company, AXA Inc., we have issued an unqualified certification in terms of key audit points. The justification of assessment dealt with the assessment of the equity interest and with regard to the other specific verifications provided by the law, especially information communicated in the management report, no observation to make. On our second report on the group's consolidated accounts, we have also issued unqualified certification. We indicated 3 audit points, similarly to the previous years. First of all, in terms of the assessment of technical reserves in life savings and pension, including postponed acquisition costs, and the second, in terms of assessment for provisions and reserves for claims in the P&C, especially in terms of the pandemic. And finally, regarding the evaluation of the recoverable value of the goodwill. In terms of the group's management report, no observation about the truthfulness and accuracy of these accounts with the consolidated accounts. We also indicate that the presentation of the consolidated accounts remains the single European electronic format, the so-called ESEF. I will now, what about our report on the third-party agreements? We remind you that the goal of is to bring to your attention the third-party agreements, and our work is not to say anything about the usefulness or the merits. We were not informed about any opinion about any authorized third-party agreements. 2 agreements were approved in previous periods. The first one in relation to Mr. Thomas Bubel, dealing with the benefit of a social protection regime, following his waiver of his work contract. Secondly, regarding Mr. Denis Duvin, dealing with the benefit of a social protection regime, following his waiver of his work contract. I turn it over now to Bénédicte Vignon, and thank you for your attention. Hello to all our shareholders. Your general meeting is gathered today in the form, in an extraordinary form as well, so that you can make decisions on several transactions regarding the capital of equity. We have 3 reports dealing with regard to various delegations granted to the Board of Directors. We've also issued the first report dealing with Resolution 17 to 24, shown on page 46 of the consolidation and call brochure. You are to delegate to the board for a period of 26 months the authorization to proceed with the issuance with maintenance of the subscription preferential right ordinary shares or of securities giving access to shares in light of the 17th resolution, and also proceed with the issuance with suppression of the subscription preferential right through in terms of ordinary actions or securities giving access to actions in light of the 18th resolution. Also the issuance with removal of the subscription preferential right and this is part of the 19th resolution. And then the issue, if there's a public offer of exchange of ordinary shares or securities giving access to shares to be issued in the 21st resolution. Finally, the issuance of ordinary shares resulting from securities or coming under resolutions 23rd and 24th. It's also to authorize your board of directors through the 20th resolution and as part of the implementation of the delegation aimed in resolutions 18 and 19 to fix the price of issuance within the legal limit by 12-month periods of 10% of the share capital, and finally delegate to your board for 26 months the necessary powers in order to proceed with the issue of ordinary shares or securities giving access to shares to be issued in order to remunerate in-kind contributions giving access to capital within the limit of 10% of the capital. That's part of the 22nd resolution. The overall nominal increase of the capital increase that could be immediately implemented or could not exceed 2 billion euros being specified on the one hand, that the maximum nominal amount of the increases that could be implemented as part of resolutions 18, 19, 21, 22, and 23 could not exceed a common ceiling of 550 million euros, and also the maximum nominal amount of the increases that could be implemented as part of the 24th resolution could not exceed 2 billion euros. And finally, the overall nominal amount of debt could not exceed 6 billion for resolution 17 and 22, subject to the subsequent examination of the conditions about the issuance proposed. We have no observation to express about the modality to determine the issue price. The final conditions of the issues not being set, we do not express any opinion about them, and nor about the consequences on the proposal of suppression of subscription preferential right. We might make additional reports. We have issued also two reports dealing with resolutions 25 and 26 and shown respectively on pages 48 and 50 of your brochure. The aim is to delegate your board for a period of 18 months and as part of a common maximum of 135 million euros, the authorization to proceed on the one hand to the issue of ordinary shares of securities giving access to equity reserved for people who are members of a corporate savings plan with suppression of the shareholder subscription preferential right, resolution 25, and also the increase in share capital with issuance of ordinary shares with the suppression of subscription preferential right of shareholders in favor of category of the beneficiaries determined in resolution 26, subject to subsequent examination of the conditions. No observation to express about how to determine the issuance price of ordinary shares to be issued given in the report of the board. The final conditions of the issuance not being set, we have no opinion on it, and consequently about the proposal for removing the subscription preferential right which is made to, we will have, if necessary, to issue complementary reports. Our last report is shown on page 52 of the call brochure and is about the 27th resolution. It's about delegating to your board for a period of 18 months the authorization to proceed with a reduction in the capital in the limit of 10% of the capital by periods of 24 months. We have no observation to express about the causes and conditions of the reduction of the capital that is considered. On behalf of the auditors, I thank you very much for your attention. I thank the auditors and suggest that we see a presentation video about our services dedicated to shareholders.